Today I'm going to talk about the prayer in Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth, Letter 8. This is the second sentence that I want to deal with today. I ask you to reveal your true reality to me. I've been saying that sentence for this prayer for, about 9 months now, multiple times every single day. And it's interesting that today I received a new awareness as I was thinking about this. Interesting, after it took me 9 months and probably several hundred iterations before I got another idea about it. Now, I'm guessing I'm kind of like everybody else, that I would love to see visible signs of God showing up in dramatic ways, you know, like a angel with wings showing up and having a conversation with me, maybe a burning bush that started to speak to me that has been told and talked about in the Bible. And I'm one of these kind of people that really want visible demonstrations of stuff. Over the course of my life, I've actually, when I've read about alien sightings or that sort of thing, spaceships, I was, I literally would speak aloud my desire to encounter an alien face to face. I would have loved to have seen an extraterrestrial and met them face-to-face and have some form of communication. So I'm really looking for visible information that is indisputable to my Doubting Thomas type of orientation. I recognize that I have, and I think this is normal as well, a standard human behavior and desire is to make the unknown known. We want to be able to penetrate the unknown, come to terms with it, come understand it, and make sense out of things. And frankly, I think that drive to make the unknown known is absolutely essential to our existence. First of all, because it keeps us growing, we keep extending ourselves out, we extend our minds, our imaginations, our thinking, our feeling, and our desire to understand keeps us going and growing. When I said this, I ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to me. I was certain that I was speaking from the point of view that I wanted to improve my ability to see God in all things. Period. That's really how I look at that. I'd like to look around, and I live in a beautiful place, and there are a lot of animal life, relatively speaking, in a kind of a civilized area. A variety of species of ducks and birds and turtles and fish and insects, butterflies and dragonflies and that sort of thing. I wanted to be able to look at those living things. I wanted to be able to look at clouds and see God. I wanted to be able to look at the flowers and see God. I wanted to see the God in the rain and the sunshine and the blue skies and gray clouds and lightning and thunder. I wanted to see God in all of that. And I was really expecting to increase my awareness to appreciate God in all of those things. Don't get me wrong. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think there's a lot right with that idea of being able to look deeply into something and see the divine essence of it, instead of, you know, the idea of reading a book by its cover, which is pretty easy to fall into that trap, you know, fall for appearances instead of look deeply at things. So when I think of my wife and I look at her and I consider her, I'm seeing the presence of God, and the same is true of our children and our puppy and friends and trees and all kinds of things. Really, they are expressions of divine consciousness. And even occasionally I think of myself that way too. In the book Christ Returns, there are so many things in there that are just wonderful concepts, and one of them that I really love is the idea that divine consciousness works for us, in us, and through us. So, I also am aware that I'm self-centered. That means I pay a lot of attention to what I think, what I say, what I do, and lots of other things as they relate to me. In other words, I make a lot of things, a lot of situations about me. Now, in a little bit of fairness to myself, I don't think I'm all that unusual in thinking and feeling that the world revolves around me. That may be a fairly common concept as well for other human beings. Up till today, I was thinking of this second sentence in the prayer, "I ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to me," as if this revelation of the divine, that my awareness, it was basically like a spectator sport. You know, I'm kind of like sitting in the bleachers or the stands or standing around or something, and then all of a sudden I would see an image of the divine that would kind of knock my socks off. I was like, oh, there, that's what I wanted. I wanted God to do all the work and reveal itself to me. However, today, I got a new awareness, the one that I mentioned earlier. It was that God revealing itself to me wasn't like a spectator sport. I wasn't really going to be an audience member saying, wow, that was amazing, what's next? You know, as if it were some sort of a magic show of miracles or startling things that were going to occur. It became clear to me that in a world of self-centered human beings, the revelation of the divine to us is going to have to be a lot more personal than a magic show. And I think this is one of the things that Jesus must have experienced early on with his miracles. Wow, that was fantastic. What can you do next? You know, impress us with the next miracle. But if we can make it personal, maybe it could be a different experience for us. And I think for me, and maybe this is true for you too, you have to consider this, that to really notice God revealing itself is going to have to get me actively involved. I'm going to have to at least partially make it about me. And I'm definitely more able and more likely to notice something if I'm actively thinking about it, feeling it, or doing it, or speaking it, or something. If I'm actively involved in this revealing of the divine, then it's liable to click for me. I'm thinking divine consciousness has probably already figured out that human beings think so much about themselves that getting their attention is easier when the focus is on them. That certainly is true for me. So with that focus of attention as a beginning point, you know, that's where we're going to start from. I think all kinds of cool things can occur from that. If we can just experience some sort of a flow of energy in our thoughts and our feelings and our actions, and those activities, those energy flows can produce some sort of very high vibration, such as joy, we're going to go, whoa, I noticed that, and I know how I produce that. I know how I access that stream of energy that produced those feelings in my body, in my heart, in my mind. And then we'll have this understanding of how to be able to create that whenever and wherever we want to. My original intention for today's talk was going to be about the concept of, and if you're writing or you think about it, put it in quotes, taking care of, taking care of. That's what I really wanted to talk about. I've been writing about that subject when I was over the last week in Bogota, Colombia, where my wife Marianne and I have been, and returned to Florida last night, is this idea of taking care of. It came up in a conversation as I was describing something, or we were talking over dinner one night, and I knew that as soon as that phrase was spoken, I think Marianne is the one that spoke it, that I wanted to understand it more completely, and I wanted to talk about it ideally on a Sunday. It's not really a foreign concept, right, taking care of. In fact, if you were looking for a theme or one of multiple themes in the book Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth, taking care of is going to be one of the dominant themes. it's described in The Truth of Existence in Letter 1. It's talked about the battle that we're going to have where we want to take care of ourselves and not, we do, we don't, we do, we don't, and same with other people in Letter 2. And it goes on through all 9 letters, giving greater clarity to this concept of taking care of. It seems to me, though, if we could get the certainty, as described in Letter 1, that divine consciousness, that God, is in fact taking care of us, is supporting us, is offering help in so many different areas, I think our ability to mitigate or completely dissolve the anxiety and the fear that is so prominent in our culture is right there in front of us. We could do it. It's very exciting, that idea, to me. Let me talk a bit about Bogota. I'm going to weave in and out of Bogota in this conversation. Bogota, Colombia, is an amazing, exciting city of about 7 million people. Now, even though I grew up in a village on Long Island of about 1,500 to 2,000 people, I like cities. I used to live in Manhattan for 11 and a half years, so that dynamism that you can find in a city that's with tremendous number of people is really appealing to me. And one of the things that is obvious is the demonstration of human activity, the amazing buildings that are being constructed, the construction that's underway for roads and other things of that sort, the museums and other human created devices and locations. Unbelievable. And you can also see a tremendous range of human activity, not only the creation from a standpoint of architecture and business and so on, but you can see all types of human conditions. You see great beauty and you see the worst squalor imaginable. You see the richest of the rich and you see the poorest of the poor. You see the hustle and bustle of people coming and going, trying to create stuff and participating in the game of life. And then you see the homeless sleeping dejectedly in the daytime in doorways. In every case, the phrase taking care of applies to what I was just describing. Everybody, to some degree, is trying to take care of someone or something. And, you know, in the worst cases, those people who that I just described in doorways, the homeless, the derelicts, the downtrodden, some of them have given up that quest of trying to demonstrate taking care of, and so they demonstrate the extreme of not being taken care of by themselves and by other people. Even as I was preparing for today's talk, I got another awareness about the true reality of God. I didn't realize this so clearly until, you know, the moment I received this awareness, if you will. The true reality of God is the opportunity to express loving kindness. It's the opportunity to express loving kindness. It is the movement of that energy of very high vibration through us to someone or something else. It is the opportunity. It's the opportunity to help someone know and experience the truth of existence. If you think the true reality of God is the opportunity to help somebody else know and experience the truth of existence, right? The truth of existence as defined in Letter 1 of Christ's Returns, growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, rhythm, all within a system of spiritual law and order. That, to me, I finally have understood, is the true reality of God. There's another great concept of the many in Christ's Returns, that, and it puts so much of life into a understandable framework. And this is the statement that says, we reap what we sow. We reap what we sow. That's the law of cause and effect, the spiritual law of cause and effect that Christ talks about throughout the book. We reap what we sow. After being in the military in Panama years ago, we're talking back in the 70s, I decided, based upon that experience one day out in the jungles, that I wanted to know something about agriculture. Even though I grew up in a kind of small fishing farming village, my family was not involved in either of those activities, and I didn't know anything about it. So after I got out of the Army, I asked my uncle-in-law, Henry, about farming. I needed to know something. I wanted to know something about it. And he was willing to teach me how to do certain things, pruning fruit trees and also how to grow vegetables. So Henry assigned a small plot of land to me. He said, here, you can have this as a garden. You can use it. And so he helped me prepare the soil, and he asked me what I wanted to grow. And despite the fact that this was in Long Island, pretty far north for latitude for some of the things I was interested in growing, I wanted to grow soybeans, peanuts, jalapenos, and then a couple of normal things, corn, radishes, and squash. And anyway, he was game, willing to let me have a go at trying to grow stuff that didn't normally grow that far north. But it was real exciting to see the differences in the time between the time you plant the seed and your time you reap the harvest. When we sow and when we reap, it was different. And Henry said to me once, he said, you know why I gave you radishes to grow? I said, no, why? He said, because anybody can grow radishes. Now, Henry had green thumbs, and this was my first attempt, and I can't say that that was true for me. But it was absolutely fascinating when I saw those little radishes burst through the soil, you know, after, I don't know, looked like 4 or 5, 6, 7 days or so. That was quick results from the planting of the seed to the reaping of the harvest. That was very, very cool. Now, you recognize that depending on the species, depending on what we're talking about, from the planting of the seed to the reaping of the harvest, the same is true not only in vegetables, but in terms of human life. The planting of the seed, in order for that harvest, that is the baby to be born, is about a 9-month period. In elephants, it's much longer. In other species, it's shorter, and so on. So we all understand it takes as long as it takes between the sowing and the reaping. Back to Colombia. I hired a driver to show me some of the sights of Bogota and surrounding areas. And one of the places he thought it was important to go to was a place about 45 minutes outside of Bogota called the Salt Cathedral. Salt Cathedral is a famous tourist attraction. Right inside of a salt mine, a cathedral or a church has been built that literally can hold and does hold every Sunday about 3,000 people who go to Mass inside. That's pretty amazing. The fact is, this salt mine was in use 500 years before Christ was born. The Indians in that area, recognizing that salt was such a valuable commodity, literally, if you're in Bogota and you want to get to the water, the salt water, it's basically driving a car is 20 to 24 hours, and 500 years before Christ was born, not that many cars were around, so you can imagine walking would have been a mighty, mighty long trip in order to get salt from the oceans, both the Atlantic or the Pacific Oceans. So, salt, when you think of being taken care of, civilizations literally can grow around sources of salt. That's why you find them near water, and in cases like this where salt mines, mountains of salt that were originated in salt water thousands and, well, make that millions, I suppose, years ago when the earth got pushed upward because of the internal pressures. And so salt, as a gift from God, the divine, is an amazing example of us being taken care of. There is no human life without salt. It's an absolute essential to us. Well, it was cool, the Salt Cathedral, to take a tour in there and see everything dug out and how the church was dug out and other religious areas, the Stations of the Cross, too. Catholics will understand that as an idea that talked about the whole process of the crucifixion. And that was real interesting. And the city nearby that was named after the chief of the Indians, who was the first one really to capitalize on the salt and its value and the mining thereof. Zipaquirá is the name of the city, and it's great. It was beautiful. The city itself is about 400 years old. It's largely Hispanic, obviously, the Spanish influence back then. And so my driver, Giovanni, wanted to show me a place in Zipaquirá where I would have the best view of the city. I could look down on Independence Square, which celebrated the independence from Spain, and also be able to see the surrounding mountainside and to be able to take photos from that place. So I was totally cool with that. So he parked down at the base of a hill, and now I looked upward and I recognized that we've got about 80 or so, maybe even more, stone steps to climb in order to get up to this flat area where I would have this panoramic view. Interestingly, right there at the base of the stairs was a little old lady. It turned out that she's the grandmother of two little beautiful children with her. She was limping badly, had a metal cane, one of these things with the kind of four prongs on the bottom in order to give it stability, not just a single point touching the ground. And so she was about to start upward, climbing on these stairs. And they're pretty high steps each. So I saw that as a great opportunity, so I offered to help her. And she's little compared to me, less than half my size, I'm sure. And so I took her under the arm, and we climbed, and the two little children were climbing right ahead of us, and Giovanni followed us. And so we started to mount the steps slowly in order to make it comfortable for her, and I took a lot of the weight off of her leg as we were climbing up. We got to about the halfway point, and she was trying to release me from my offer, kind of trying to take care of me, actually, by recognizing that she was walking much slower than I would have walked on our way up to the stairs, and she didn't want to impose. So she was really trying to take care of me by saying, if you can go ahead, you don't have to help me anymore, which I wasn't about to allow to happen. So we continued, and I helped her up to the top of the step. And we got up to the top, and she was talking in response to Giovanni's questions, asked about her leg. And she said she had broken it and fractured it in four places, and that's the reason she had been unable to go back to work. And so she was caring for her two grandchildren. And I have to tell you, these two little kids, one was a girl about, I'm guessing, 6 years old, the most beautiful face. And because I know body shapes and styles, she had what is called the gamin style. You'll find a lot of actresses, a lot of movie stars with that body size, and just the most beautiful face. Just a beautiful, beautiful girl. And her younger brother, maybe a year and a half, 2 years younger, also really, really beautiful little boy. So we had gotten up to the top of the steps, and I just, as she was talking to Giovanni, I took some money out and gave her that money, suggesting that perhaps some of that money could be used to buy ice cream for the children. And when I used the word helado, that the big eyes in that beautiful little six-year-old girl, probably enlarged by two times, so now they're about the size of a silver dollar, like, oh, they understood the ice cream word in Spanish. So it was fantastic. I took some beautiful photos of the panorama, and that was great. And the three of them made their way on to wherever, home, I presume. Giovanni and I, after I took the photos, went back to the car and headed back to the city. I felt really, really good about what happened. I felt really good about it. I recognized I had already harvested good feelings by that feeling of being loving and taking care of that family. Great harvest already had occurred. Boom, boom, that's how long it took. I didn't have to wait very long for those real, real good feelings. And I think this is a key to understand. So when we got back down, Giovanni told me of another place earlier in the day that I was interested in, because he always carried in his car a book about it. He referred to it simply as the sanctuary, El Santuario. El Santuario. And has a much longer name. And it is a place in Bogota where the apparition of Mary, Mother of Jesus, appeared to the locals. And it was a place where it was amazing, and a little teeny, not exactly a hole in a wall, but a very unassuming place, fascinating to me. And I want to just add this right now, that I find it kind of challenging from an American point of view. I wanted to make a donation that day. There is no place to donate money. And the next time I went, I looked around even more deeply, scrutinized the place. There is no place to leave money. You can't leave a donation, even if you wanted to, which I did want to do. So anyway, we went to the sanctuary, and Giovanni was telling me the story that Mary had appeared there multiple times, and even to the point where she had been photographed. You could see this kind of ghost-like shape in the midst of people, and was photographed, and he had the photographs were in the book that he carried with him all the time in the car. And so it was just amazing. One of the important things about this is that whenever she came in those, I think three or four, maybe however many times she showed up, she would speak in Aramaic, followed by speaking in Spanish. And it was always amazing to everybody. But she spoke of two things: taking care of people and peace. Taking care of people and peace. One of the things that is a hallmark of that little sanctuary, that little grotto, that little building, is not only is there a plastic chair set up and they conduct mass in there, I guess several times a week, but there is a well as near the entrance, and people have healed of cancers and other illnesses when they drank that water. So that water literally was put there based upon Mary's instructions in one of her appearances. And so they put it there, and anybody that drinks that water and believes can be healed. Now, the main point of it from a religious standpoint is that Mary was asked to speak to her son in order to have the healing. It's not like Mary was doing the healing. Mary happened to be the intermediary. Could you talk to your son for me to ask him to heal so-and-so? And so that was the whole, dynamic. That was the sequence of how things happened with relation to this. And it's pretty cool. I'm going to give you the website that you can look at it, and it's in Spanish, but you can click a button and Google will translate it for you. The name of the website is Madre. Basically, this is Mother of Divine Grace. Madre de la Divina. That's divine with an A. Gracia. Like grace, but ends in IA instead of an E. .com. Madre de la Divina Gracia. .com. And so it's a beautiful website talking about what that was all about. So Giovanni had a couple of empty plastic bottles, and I had bought bottles of water for us earlier in the day. He said, you can bring that bottle, let's fill it. And so I emptied out the water and filled it with the water from the well, because I wanted to take it back to the hotel room and give it to Marianne. We're at high altitudes. Bogota is very high, and the air is very dry and very thin, and you can definitely feel the difference as compared to being a person who dwells at sea level like we do in Naples, Florida. So I brought that bottle back for her and explained a little bit about that chapel and the sanctuary. But the first day when we went there, I saw a clipboard, so I asked you know, this, you can request healing for people? He said, yep, that's it. So I sat down and started to write a list of people that I was petitioning that Mary would ask of Christ that they be healed. Marianne's brother-in-law, Richard, has cancer. Been battling that for some few years now. And that's a good thing now to have some other power be working for him other than chemo and radiation or in surgery. I have an ex-brother-in-law, Peter, also from the eastern end of Long Island, who has recently had surgery for cancer. And as I'm writing these people's names down, including Marianne, including my brothers, John and George, including my sister Anne, and then adding friends and adding clients and adding coaches and adding everybody that I can think of, our children, our grandchildren, just about everybody, tears are streaming down my face as I'm writing this. Oh, I feel the emotion of that even as I speak. And it was like, wow. Just writing this, I'm already reaping the harvest of this healing feeling, if you will. These tears have got to be a good thing. And so I decided to sign my name on it. In parentheses, and me. I would like healing too. It's just wonderful. It was just a wonderful experience. On our last full day in Bogota, which was Friday, I wanted to take Marianne to the sanctuary so she could have that experience as well. And we took about a dozen empty bottles of water bottles that we consumed over the week, and so we could fill those and bring those home and then send them to Richard and Peter and my brother John and my sister Anne and my brother George and other people that are important to us, who are in need of healing. And the feelings of taking care of people was so deeply joyful. It really is just a wonderful sense. And just the gratitude to know that we had that opportunity. And I thought again, you know, this is the true reality of God. The opportunity to recognize and then to show loving kindness to somebody else and to ourselves as well, but to recognize the opportunity to demonstrate loving kindness is the true reality. That was so far on that one day. I had those two very clear, I couldn't miss those kind of experiences with the grandmother and the two little children, and then to go to the sanctuary and get that bottle of holy blessed water for Marianne, and also to petition for the healing of friends and family. So on the final day, Friday, the same day that I took Marianne back to the sanctuary, we went to the Museo de Oro, which is the gold museum, world famous. That is a tremendous tourist attraction in Bogota. It's probably one of the top two or three or four or five displays of gold artwork created over the centuries, if not thousands of years, by the inhabitants. It's an amazing, amazing place. So as we're paying our $5 or whatever it was to get into the museum, I decided, because I love information, I was going to get a headset. While I speak Spanish and understand Spanish, I wanted it in English. And so I'm going to have this headset that is going to explain, you know, section by section throughout the museum, the history of it. I thought that was a real lot of information. I need that kind of stuff much more than Marianne. But as we're standing there, a little boy tugs on my shirt and says to me in English, "Do you want an interpreter? Do you want a translator?" And I thought, well, this is an opportunity. I was real clear on that. So, who's the translator? And I was looking around for some adult. Maybe he was the solicitor. He was the sales rep for some adult. That it was not true. It was going to be him. He was going to be the translator. And he spoke beautiful English. So I signed him up. I agreed. I said, okay, how much are you going to charge us? He thought about it for a moment, you know, put his finger by his chin, just like you would imagine, just the most adorable thing. So this little 10-year-old guy says, $1. I said, okay, you got a deal. So an older person, it turns out to be his aunt. He was there with his father, stepmother, an aunt, all of whom lived in Colombia, in Cali. And he himself, his name was Juan Felipe. Juan Felipe lived all the rest of the year in Chicago. And in the summertime, he would come and spend the summer with his father. And he would spend the rest of the time of the year in Chicago with his mother. So it was interesting. He spoke beautiful English. So he's now going to be the translator for Marianne. And so when we walk around to diorama to diorama to all these different display cases, and he's trying to describe. So what was happening is his aunt was telling him what it was, and then he would repeat it in English to Marianne. And of course, there's English and Spanish words written above the each of the displays, so whichever language you were comfortable with, you could get whatever. You'd get all the information. So he was just an adorable little guy. And he'd walk around, and he was, every once in a while, he'd ask me, he said, Marianne, you know the word. You know the word. What's the word for that? And in one case, she said, helmet. He said, yeah, yeah, that's the word. That's the word, helmet. And then a gold helmet, it was in the case. He couldn't remember it. He knew it in Spanish, casco, but he didn't know what it was in English or couldn't recall it. At one point, he's standing in front of a case, and Marianne says, so what is this, Juan Felipe? And then this little boy looks at it and said, oh, this is gold for little babies right after they're born. This is going to be their first gift of gold that is given to a little baby. And Marianne just nodded and smiled at him, and the description above in English had absolutely nothing at all to do with this. So Juan Felipe, when he was at a loss for what to say, was pretty creative in what he was making up. And so as this little boy is going around and shepherding, literally like a little mother hen, Marianne, come on over here next, come over here next. And it was just amazingly adorable. He was taking care of her. He was taking care of her. And the good news is, we also, because our understanding of the truth of existence, we were providing work for him. We were fulfilling his needs by making him useful, which is what he was eager to do in the first place. And because we had agreed on a price, he knew he was working for pay, and he was doing a fantastic job. So as we neared the end of the trip in the Museo de Oro, I pulled him over and gave him a $10 bill, telling him that the value of his translation and his being a guide far exceeded the $1 that he had offered to charge us in the first place. And kind of like the little girl going up the steps when she heard the word helado for ice cream, Marianne said, Juan Felipe's eyes got huge, like saucers, when he saw that $10 bill, which would go a long way in Colombia for a little boy of 10 years old. But that was the highlight of that whole trip in the museum, was the interaction with that little boy and his family. Sure, the gold was absolutely astonishing, the beauty of it, the variety of it, and so on. But when it really came down to the true reality of God being revealed, it was being revealed in our interactions with other people. Providing work, taking care of, helping to fulfill their needs, while at the same time, us sowing those seeds and instantly reaping the benefit of that in our feelings of joy, and the gratitude that we had the opportunity to be loving and kind to other people was just absolutely fantastic. The true reality and the revelation thereof is not a spectator sport. It is us doing it. And as that loving energy flows to us and through us. It is working for us and in us. And then we're distributing it. That's, we'll be able to see the true reality of the divine if we're willing to express it. I'd like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we should be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.